talking about. Jeez, couldn't we get a shorter one of these things? Or a box back here, maybe? Hi, everybody. My name is Myers Raymer, and I'm an alcoholic. This is just so cool. You know, because this thing worked exactly the way you said it would. I took my last drink on January the 15th of 88. I was kidding with Clifford. I said, Clifford, you guys started this group. They started this group the same month I sobered up. Of course, I didn't go here, but, you know, that would come later. But it was so cool to think that they started it just for me. So that I appreciate it. But 7 years later, I could tool in here, suicidal in a nutcase, and get the help that I needed. I want to say, before I read the original deal of how it works, we always talk about being grateful about things, but I can tell you guys that I am truly grateful that 15 years ago, there were some men and women who had the yahas to stand on the firing line and take the heat in the fellowship to have meetings where all we did was study the big book. Big book U, I call it, and it's just the coolest thing. And over the years, this group has taken a lot of heat because of that stuff. And I'm telling you, I cannot tell you how grateful I am that you guys were here and strong and doing it. Many years ago now, Cliff told me, Myers, if you're going to stay here, you're going to have to get in the trenches with us. And I did. And the cool part about that stuff was that I never realized that you guys, a bunch of you, were already in the trenches doing the deal, and I never realized what kind of friendships and what kind of coolness would spring out of that deal. You want to get a fellowship around you that you crave? Get in the trenches with a bunch of guys and go carry a message out of this big book and see what happens. It's the coolest thing, man. Around this group on Saturday nights, we always read the original manuscript of How It Works, the chapter 5. And it states things a little bit different. And it's interesting, you can always tell what Bill's original intent was when you read this manuscript from this form, because it doesn't leave any middle-of-the-road stuff. There's no outs. You either are in it or you're out of it, you see? There's no gray area. So listen to this. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our directions. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Now, there are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a way of life which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Now, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to follow directions. At some of these, you may balk. You may think you can find an easier, softer way. We doubt if you can. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Now, some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we are dealing with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for you. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. You must find him now. Half measures will avail you nothing. You stand at the turning point. Throw yourself under his protection and care with complete abandon. Now, we think you can take it. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as your program of recovery. I love how he says that. One, admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of and direction of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely willing that God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly, on our knees, ask him to remove our shortcomings, holding nothing back. Man, why did they change that? Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make complete amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our contact with God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual experience as the result of this course of action, we tried to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Now, you may exclaim, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Now, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter of the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after have been designed to sell you three pertinent ideas. A, that you are alcoholic and cannot manage your own life. B, that probably no human power can relieve your alcoholism. And C, that God can and will. And if you're convinced on these vital issues, if you are not convinced on these vital issues, you ought to reread this book to this point or else throw it away. That's it. One of the coolest things that I get to do is introduce Cliff Bishop, and I'm not going to roast him, and I'm going to be the nicest guy in the world tonight, because Cliff Bishop is my hero. He is. And for years now, he's been standing, taking the heat, and doing this stuff. He was doing it a long time before I got here, and I expect he'll be doing it a long time after I'm gone. You know, in those, well, he'll tell you about the history stuff, and we sometimes take it for granted that we can show up here any Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday night and get a big old dose of Big Book and then go out and do what we need to do. But when you stop and think how much accountability had to go in to getting this many people to come do this stuff, it's an amazing deal. And I will truly always be grateful for the fact that I was held accountable and made to do the things I did not want to do, and it only saved my life. Thanks, Cliff. Come on, bud.
If you sat too long when you get too old, you know it. Good Lord of mercy, look at this, would you? Well, good evening, all you fellow trudgers. I want to welcome everybody to the celebration of our 15th year of the primary purpose branch of the great world's largest lost and found department. Yeah, we used to hear that a lot, and I don't hear much of it anymore, but isn't it the truth? But my name is Cliff Bishop, and I am a real alcoholic. Curse in town, you can tell. Also a serious and very grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And because of a loving God I found through our 12 steps, a loving and lovely Al-Anon wife that's here tonight and sitting through all of this, and God bless her, this is the second night she's been, or second day she's been able to get out this year, and she's here for us tonight, and I'm so thankful for that. The sponsor that taught me how to follow the direction that came with the steps and the Big Book and a whole bunch of people exactly like you, I am truly enjoying my 7,302nd day of sobriety, and I, by God, love living sober. By God. A little bit emotional tonight. I don't know exactly why, but Ellen touched me a great deal, especially in her close, about the day we're going to meet the creator of our fellowship, the creator of our lives, the creator of everything good in our life, and see if we really enjoyed this brief period that he's given us. Before I get into this, though, I look around here, and what a heck of a deal we've got tonight. Darren, I want everybody who had any part of setting this thing up and making this possible tonight, stand up so we can recognize you. Get up, Darren. Every one of you, come on. Thank you so much. You know, it's sort of interesting. You stop, if you have really given this program a test, you've recognized something, if you just turn loose of the thing and let life happen, God leads you down a path that's pretty wonderful. And the path he led me on, first of all, this 20 years that I'm coming up on next week, is not all I owe Alcoholics Anonymous. I owe them a good bit more, because over 38 years of my life, I can give total credit to Alcoholics Anonymous for them. First time around, I didn't know what to do. I got a sponsor that didn't have a clue what this thing's about. They died so drunk, and I almost did. 13 years out there, found myself back, but there'd been a tremendous change in this fellowship. Back in the 60s, when I was here, we had speaker meetings, and that's about all we had, and people get up and tell what they were like, what happened, and what they're like today, and we had a lot of people staying sober. When I got back, there were very few speaker meetings, but an awful lot of discussion meetings. And I loved them because I got to talk at every blessed one of them. But I started noticing something. And if you've been around any period of time, you've noticed it too. All of a sudden, that large group is no longer a large group. It started thinning out. And I ran into an article by a reprint of a copy or a speech made by a guy named Bob Bacon. Bob was a delegate for Northeast Ohio. In 1976, he said, "We're making a tremendous mistake in Alcoholics Anonymous in our meetings. We're no longer focusing on the big book. We're no longer stressing the traditions. We are not bringing to the newcomer the message that was brought to us." And I took a look at what was happening, and I realized how true that was. This group started in the library of the Serenity House in Little Rock, Arkansas. I had heard a tape of a guy named Joe that lived up there, and my daughter was married a guy from Arkansas, and they moved back to Little Rock. And I met Joe in December of 1983 at a noon meeting. And I told him I wanted to visit with him. I'd heard this tape, and so he invited me down to the office or the Serenity House, and I went down. And we sat there a few moments, and Joe looked at me, and what he said and what I heard were two different things. What he said, I don't remember, but what I heard was, "Cliff, you don't know anything about alcoholism, and you damn sure don't know anything about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous." Now, I had over 6 years in the fellowship, and that hurt my feelings, and I started getting up and leaving. I thought, no, you're the only one to find this guy. Shut up and listen. I said something about being powerless over people, places, and things, and he said, "Cliff, if that's your problem, you need to go to PPAT. AA is for Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, for alcoholics." And he sat down, he opened a big book, and he read what we've heard tonight, the forward to the first edition. And when he got through with me in about, I don't know, less than half an hour, 19 years after AA found me and I was looking for a way out, I understood what alcoholism was and knew I was an alcoholic in my heart of hearts. Joe and Charlie came to Dallas the next spring. And I sat there and listened to these guys Friday night, all day Saturday, and up to 1 o'clock on Sunday morning, and realized when I sat there and listened to these two guys go through the big book, that there was something that I had been totally ignorant of this whole period of time. We went back up to Little Rock, Lee Carroll, spent some more time with Joe, came home, and what I wanted to do was get one of the groups I was going to start a big book study. Now, we had some of the groups had what they called big book studies, but they'd read a paragraph, and then they'd talk about whatever they wanted to. It was another form of a discussion meeting, and I wanted something like what I had witnessed up there. We started having meetings at my home. And ultimately, along about 1987, Joe and Charlie were put on their first seminar held in our part of the country in Tulsa. And Joe and Charlie were up in Denton doing the Big Book Comes Alive at the Shalom group, and I went up. And when they got ready late Sunday morning, I said something, I heard about this seminar, and I said something to Joe. I said, what about this seminar in Tulsa? And he said, "Well, I'd sure like to see you there." Well, he had become my sponsor at that point, and he said, "I'd like for you to do something." I did it. We didn't sit around and discuss it. I just did it. 4 days of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the 12 concepts, a real in-depth presentation of the big book. And as I got ready to leave, I said to old Gene Lott, I said, "Man, I wished I had had a way to, I mean, it's a shame that I had to come to all the way to Tulsa to find out about this. Seems to me that's what we ought to be doing in our meetings." And he said, "That's what we do here." And I said, "You're kidding." He said, "No." That was in November of 87, and I said, "Can I come up and visit you?" In January of 88, I went up during that big ice storm. And Gene took me out to the original West Side group for old Joe Massey. Hell, Joe McCoy, I think almost everybody knows. Joe's the guy who has taken my Joe's place. And both of these Joes have had a dramatic impact on us being here tonight. But we went over there, and the ice was on the streets, and there were about 150 young people there. Every one of them was a big book. And they opened the big book, and they read the big book, and they studied the big book. The next day, Gene took me over to his group, the Sobriety Live group, at noon. And most of the kids that showed up during the noon hour had their big book, but that night, every one of them didn't. Again, it was a very large crowd. I came home with my tail on fire. I sat there in Gene's dining area while he was at work and had a little conversation with God. And I said, "If it's your will, dear God, I would like to see something like that back home. I need it." Now, this is a selfish program, whether we like to accept it or not. I don't know why you came to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to save my ass. What did you come for? And I do what I do today to save my ass, although I learned if I want to do that, I've got to give everything away and a little bit more. But I came back home, and I got with my kids, the ones that had been coming over the house and some of the others, and we sent a letter out to some of our good friends, and along about January 26th, as John said, 1988, we had our founders meeting. We had about 60 or 70 people here. Some of them had been around a good long while, and what they told me after that founders meeting, "Cliff, if all you're going to do is study the big book, you don't have a prayer. You don't have a chance of this thing being successful." I don't know how many of you have been to our Tuesday night big book study, but if you haven't, come by and check it out. It's one of the largest single meetings in Dallas today. But we started that big book study, and it's been sort of an evolution. It has evolved. We started out just reading a big book, and we'd have a tendency to go drifting off on a tangent sometimes. And so we got a hold of Joe's big book study guide. And we used it for a couple of years, but he stopped at chapter 7. We'd like to go through chapters 8, 9, 10, 11, Dr. Bob's story, and the 12 traditions. And so we put together our study guide that had become our guiding influence within the group itself. I have been overwhelmed, truly overwhelmed, with what has happened as a result of this group. Now, all I can take credit for and all I am so grateful for is that I was willing to follow that path that started out in Joseph's library in Little Rock, and we're up to this point tonight. We have been invited to bring the big book into somewhere between 3 and 4 dozen wind-up places in the Dallas community. What's a wind-up place? That's where the hell we wind up. Not in AA meetings. Salvation Army, Souls Harbor, Homeward Bound, Maggie's House, on down the list. And one of my real blessings tonight is a young lady came up and gave me a hug, and she said, "Cliff, I was at Maggie's when you were doing the big book over there in 1992. What a blessing. And that's the kind of life that we have been led into. We have been very, very blessed to have some of the most fantastic, wonderful, willing people to show up and become a part of this group. And as a result of that, I've been able to back off and take care of my precious bride and do a little payback there and turn this basic responsibility, getting off her bus and going out and carrying this message to those of you who have been willing to come in here and become a part of what we're about. We've got a speaker that's become almost an annual event around here, and I couldn't be more pleased with it because he's been a big part of our success. And one of the guys that I love dearly, I just think the world of Chris Raymer. Chris showed up here a few years ago. This is an old story, but it's one I love to tell because it's, again, the way God works in our lives if we just give him a chance. But Chris showed up here one night, happened to be on a Thursday night, and for whatever reason, I just happened to remember that back when we had a sharing meeting, we'd pick a topic, and we would share our experience and knowledge on that topic, and that night it happened to be the promises. Now, I didn't know Chris was up here checking us out with a specific thought in mind. He had a brother who was looking for a place to go to maintain his sobriety. Chris didn't say anything. But about 2 weeks later, here he shows up again. The patch is gone. I thought, holy mackerel, if we can get that kind of power in our meeting, we got to have a few more like that. And I found out that Chris had a twin brother that was just as screwed up as he had been before he finally... And for about 2 years around here, Myers was kind of dead, would he? I mean, he was here, Well, this is a program of rigorous honesty, and we're not going to cut it up tonight. But finally, one night, he finally said, "Okay, damn it, I'll do it," and he did it, and we have not been able to put out the fire since. He learned what this thing was about, and he's been out there. I don't know how many lives have been touched because Chris and Myers does. And also, the study guide that we have has had such a tremendous influence on so many people and has been the source of other groups being created. Couldn't possibly have happened if Chris hadn't sent Myers to us, because I could sit down and put the thing together on paper. But how do you get in book form? Well, Myers is in the bookbinding business, and so it all became a natural. This may sound a little bit, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for. But the truth of it is, this group is a result of God's action in the lives of a bunch of people. His will is to get back to what we're about. If you've been around very long, you know that Alcoholics Anonymous is in real, real deep trouble. We've gone from a very high success rate of 75 to 90% success in people maintaining long-term sobriety to less than 2%. And the reason is that we have elected to ignore the one thing that has saved the lives of more alcoholics than anything on God's earth, the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill said, if you read this thing carefully, you'll come to understand. Unfortunately, most of us don't read it very carefully. But in this group, we study it very carefully. And as a result of that, we've learned what the program is. We put the program to the test. And those who have found themselves greatly rewarded. As Meyer said, he found the fellowship at his grave. I wouldn't even begin to guess, and even wouldn't know, until it built his ego up too damn much if we ever counted him. But the number of people have come to Myers and said, "Will you be my sponsor?" The ladies who have come to Darren and said, "Will you be my sponsor?" The people who have come to members of our group who have been around any period of time and say, "Will you be my sponsor?" Alcoholics Anonymous group is to be a spiritual entity. And it can only be a spiritual entity to the extent that the members of that group wind up adopting this program as a way of life, a spiritual way of life, and commit themselves to helping others so they can grow spiritually. Chris has been such a primary influence on our group. The message he carries every year he's been up here has been fire and brimstone. Boy, get off your ass and go do it. But also he believes in us enough that when he has a chance, he sends people to us saying, if you really want this thing, here's where you go, because you're going to get it straight. I can't tell you what I think of Chris. I really can't tell you what I think of this group of people that God's put in my life. But Chris has been a very positive influence. And I love him dearly, and cut that down. I'm going to go ahead and just tell him how wonderful you are. And then he's going to go screw it up. No, we're deeply indebted to Chris, and I'm so thankful he, again, the group decided, the committee decided they wanted Chris up here again this year, and I wanted him up here again this year, and I hope we'll invite him back next year. You see, the thing we love about Chris is you can't find a damn thing to argue with him about in our group. There's a line in the big book on page 17 that says we have a way on which we can absolutely agree and join in brotherly and harmonious action. We're on exactly the same page, the same paragraph, and the same sentence. And Chris, my hero, get your butt up here and let's get us moving tonight.
There's a lot of people in here. My name's Chris Raymer. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Can y'all hear me all right? That's good. A little sweaty here. Boy, what a nice introduction. I was just trying to think. I don't know how many times I've talked at Primary Purpose and their anniversaries. I remember the first one I talked at was a 9-year anniversary. And I don't know. I may have missed a few years in between there. But what an honor it is to be here. And I have family in this room, and blood family, and I've got a lot of people that I know and love in this room. I've truly got some heroes in here, people I haven't seen in a long time, and I'm a little emotional about it. I tell you, it's been kind of a strange day. I was with my girlfriend all day long, Patty, from New York. She's a Yankee, and I just need to... Never mind, I won't go there, but I talked in Ennis last night, and we woke up this morning to hear the booms, you know, the sonic booms, and it's like, you know, the news and the shuttle stuff, and bless their hearts, and I don't know. I first thing I did is call Myers and said, well, I guess we have to cancel tonight because, you know, I mean, everybody's going to be tied up with this, and he said, no, we're still going to do this, and I'm honored that we did. I think that's the way it should be. Cliff hugged my neck and said he loved me, and he said he forgot to tell him how shy I was, and he laughed, you know, patted me on the back. I think I need to make this real clear tonight, because some of you guys, some of y'all have heard me speak 1,000 times, and you always keep coming back from the butt kicking, and some of you have never heard me speak. Only thing you've ever heard me speak from maybe tapes that you've heard or CDs that float around the countryside, and you hear them and say, well, this guy just is angry son of a bitch, I am so passionate about Alcoholics Anonymous. I was talking last night. I'm going to keep referring back to that because I may repeat myself. Some of y'all were in there last night. But, you know, you got to look at this from the perspective that I come from. I mean, I'm nearly 21 years around Alcoholics Anonymous. I was thinking 21 years. I've got 15 years of sobriety, so 5 or 6 years, six at least, in and out of this fellowship, nearly dying out there. And when I finally got to this fellowship in 1980, it didn't get any better because it's just the story is just exactly what Cliff was talking about. I walked into meetings where they weren't carrying the message of hope. What they were doing was carrying some junior therapist's idea of what Bill Wilson was probably intending to say when he wrote the big book. Y'all follow what I'm saying? And you draw that little thread, and it's like you know. But I'm a real alcoholic. You know, I mean, I'm not a little disco drunk. I mean, I'm the real McCoy, and I know some of y'all in this room are disco drunks, and you got here because some therapist told you to come here, or you got a DWI and you came and you got comfortable and you put the plug in the jug and you've stopped and you've never worked a single step, but you're managing to stay sober. And I'm going to tell you, you're welcome in this fellowship, and I'm going to tell you this point blank, you're not going to like this talk. I feel that it's just real important for me. I'm going to try to keep this short and sweet because it's going to heat up in here. But I think it's important for me because I need to tell you going in the door, I love every one of you in here. I love every one of you in here. And if you're going to a group that carries middle-of-the-road solution, you like those open discussion meetings, you take your little luncheon and just talk about whatever's bothering you during the day, and you got sober in those meetings and you like those meetings, terrific. I just... I just think they suck. You know, I don't know. I don't know how to say anything. I have watched more good alcoholics die in that crap than I can shake a stick at. And I, you know, that's the perspective I come from. I nearly died getting the fellowship. I've seen a lot of people stay sober when they finally got connected to the program. You see, and I got to tell you, I do clerical work at a treatment center. Some of you got cats in here I know through that hospital, and I need to tell you that I'm a firm believer in treatment. I'm a firm believer in drying out and getting your feet firmly planted on the ground. But my job in the hospital is to do some statistical work. I call the cats after they leave treatment to check on them and see how they're doing. And y'all have heard me 1,000 times say this. All the cats that leave our hospital and end up coming back into groups like this, Primary Purpose, and other groups in the Metroplex where they carry the message of hope through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they stay sober. And the cats that don't. You see, treatment centers don't fix you. Treatment centers dry you out. Without a daily reprieve, I can't live off the food I had last week. I got to have food today, my spiritual connection. Am I going to be in a room full of men and women that are going to help me on the spiritual path, or am I going to be in a room full of men and women that don't have a clue what this is about? You know, it's the hardest thing, I think, for the newcomer to understand, and maybe some of you family members to understand. You'd think we would all be on the same page. I'll tell you this right now, even in a room like this full of my friends, people who've been around Primary Purpose for years, we're not all on the same page. Because there's a lot of people that do not understand what alcoholism and drug addiction is about. I tell you, if you want to go into a discussion meeting and start some controversy, talking to Kirk, some of the other guys earlier, and you want to stir the pot up, walk in and introduce yourself just like Cliff and Myers did as a recovered alcoholic. Oh, but Chris, please, you got to understand, we'll always be recovering. You know, I want to puke. I hear it at the hospital where I work. It's one more attempt at somebody sharing their stupid opinions. I think Alcoholics Anonymous would be great if we would just all understand going in the door that when you get here, you're not allowed to share your opinion. There's a lot of places to share your opinions. There's a lot of places to talk about how you think this fellowship ought to be run, you know. But, you know, when you get here, gosh, it's just unbelievable. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story tonight. I just need to tell you, 15 years ago, when I finally landed in a room full of people that had big books and they understood what the message was and they carried that message of hope to me, 2 weeks after I got to that room, the desire to drink left me, and I recovered from alcoholism. You know, the book says that you've either recovered or you haven't. I mean, if you're still obsessing about alcohol, you haven't recovered. That doesn't mean that you're bad or worse than anybody else. It just means that you're still sick. You still have the mind of an alcoholic. And what you have to do is get well. And that's what the steps are about. See, there's two things that go on. There's the fellowship out here, and then there's the program. Y'all down with that? And a lot of people come into this thing we call the fellowship, and we eat dinner, and we the little one-liners, and we do all the little stuff, you know, the little we get together and discussion. But then there's the program, and that's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You with us? And a lot of people have been around this fellowship for years and have never been in the program, and that's why they're not getting well. It's just real simple. 100% success rate in Alcoholics Anonymous. Do y'all understand that? Nobody that I've ever come across, nobody that anybody in this room, I bet you a dollar, has ever seen that worked these steps that didn't recover. And you continue to work the steps and stay connected to the God, and you stay recovered. This absolute crap that we're always going to be sick. But I'm trying to turn over a nicer, easier life. God, I'm not into this thing 10 minutes, and I'm already lathered up. This is nuts. So I apologize going in the door. I'll make amends to you right now. If you would like to stay sick, it's your privilege. Stay sick. Let me read you something. Bill Wilson, in A Vision for You, he writes about the story when Dr. Bob and him first got together. Bill Wilson says of Dr. Bob, he had a desperate desire to stop drinking, but saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. You with me? He was an alcoholic. But he didn't understand what it was to be an alcoholic. And that's the biggest problem that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous today. We've got a bunch of people in our fellowships that still don't understand what it is to be an alcoholic. You ask... I lecture at the hospital that I work for. I'll lecture at that hospital, and there'll be 80 people in the room, and I'll say, how many people in this room believe that they're alcoholics or addicts? And 80 people will all raise their hands. Now listen, there's a bunch of liars in this room. You see, because if you really understood and you really knew what it meant to be an alcoholic, you would never relapse again, because you would have the desperation of a drowning man to get well. You understand it? It's not that they don't know the solution. They know what the solution is. It's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship. But they're not going to do that. They're not going to seek the solution. How many people do we send back to Cliff Bishops and Myers? You know, Dara, we give them the numbers. They call. They come in here. A lot of y'all in this room are have been to that hospital, and y'all hooked up and stayed. Hallelujah. But I'm going to tell you, for every one of you in here, there's 100 more that came back to the Metroplex, came one time and left. Them sons of bitches over there are too rigid. too rigid. Let me tell you, I had a friend of mine named Jerry. We buried him on Thursday in San Antonio. He drank up one liver and drank up another. And he was a cool guy. He was a licensed chemical dependency counselor and probably was responsible for, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of people coming to treatment and getting well. You know, he was a good man. But the last 8 years of his life were spent using alcohol and drugs, and he could not understand. He could not get a clear idea in his little head what he had to do, because his case was so different. Now, let me tell you something, folks. Any of you cats in this room ever sat down and watched somebody die an alcoholic death? That's rigid. What these steps ask us to do is like kissing a baby's butt compared to what alcohol asks us to do. The compromises that alcohol caused us to make. And what are we supposed to do? Unbelievable. On page 34 in the big book, and I'll get out of here because y'all didn't want to hear me read all night long, but this is my new favorite paragraph. I read it all the time. Y'all do that? Y'all have a little favorite to go through these little... It says, whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he's going to drink or not. You with us? Many of us felt we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. Now, folks, that's alcoholism. That's alcoholism. And I'm going to tell you something. There's a lot of people out there in the real world out there that have this unbelievable idea that for some strange reason, alcoholism is a behavioral problem. You know, go tell that to Jerry, if you could get him back out of the casket and ask him, hey, buddy, are you just misbehaving? Did you drink out two livers because you were mistreated as a child? Is that real? Or do you perhaps have a genetic predisposition to this problem? Are you genetically wired in such a way that you can't choose whether you're going to do it or not? But you see, so many people out there, I think this is probably the one key piece that we miss in our fellowships today and in our meetings and in our treatment centers and in our hospitals, because we won't make sure that the alcoholic understands. If you can choose to drink, you're not an alcoholic. If you can choose not to drink, then choose not to drink. And I would just as soon you leave this fellowship so you'll stop killing everybody else around you. I hear people come up on the podium all the time. It's the same. I got up this morning by the grace of God and I chose not to drink. Well, no kidding. Get out of here. No shit. You actually got up this morning and brushed your teeth and combed your hair and took a shower, did all the stuff that you and made a choice. Today I'm not going to drink. Well, you know, I got to tell you something, guys. I've had some great time in the last 15 years, and most of those days I wanted to be sober. But I'm going to tell you, there were some of those days out there I didn't want to live. Y'all understand that? It wasn't that I wanted to drink. I didn't want to live. And if I'd had to make a choice whether I was going to pick up that bottle or not, God loves me way too much for that. And that's what the whole crux of alcoholism is about, and that was what this book was about. That's what Cliff was talking about. That's what Myers was talking about. Our whole point of this fellowship is for us to get together, do a few things that are uncomfortable and that we don't want to do, but we do it anyway, and we have a thing called a spiritual experience as the result, and our life changes forever. And the desire to drink leaves. We're placed in the position of neutrality. God, is there any better news that we could tell a newcomer than that? Jesus, that's all I wanted to hear when I got to this fellowship. That's all I wanted to hear. 1980, as a result of a little domestic disturbance with my first wife, I ended up in a MHMR, and a nice counselor said, "Chris, buddy, we can do some therapy with you, but what you're really going to need to do is go to Alcoholics Anonymous, because you are drunk, and you got some tough times with this alcohol business." And they sent me to an AA meeting in Denton, Texas. And I went to that AA meeting. We were laughing about it last night. I walked, there was these dark stairs, walking up these, not just walk up these dark stairs, and I walked in, and there was one little bulb on a lamp back in the, and there was an easy chair and an old crusty somebody sitting in it, reeling back and forth with the crusty chair. And this creek up these old stairs, you know what I'm saying, guys? It was dark, like, and there's no light. And I walked in, my eyes, it's like being in Mar Fraley's in Houston. You know, you walk in, you got to stand there for a few minutes, so your eyes will get adjusted. I'm like, what the hell do I walk into? What is this, a seance or what? And I walked in, there's six other people in the room with this guy, and they're all, you know, like this, and there ain't a book in the place, and there's no lid just like this. And they said, "Sit down." And I said, "Do I have to?" You know, it's like, and I sat down, and I like that, and we started to go around the room, and this little guy talks for about 20 minutes about something. I didn't have a clue what it was about, and this lady says, listen, I have a problem. And she was an Al-Anon, and her husband was drinking, and she wanted to talk about the disease, and she wanted to talk about why, and this guy started sharing some opinions, and, you know, basically, and I just, I'm freaking out. You know, I split. Dig, after the meeting, ran down, set in my pickup truck, finished the other half of the six-pack that I had before I went to the meeting. And I said, "Boy, that was an experience I just had up there in that meeting." But you see, I didn't want to drink anymore, and I didn't want to do anything else, and I didn't want to keep getting in trouble, and so I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I spent the next 7 years, another DWI, Myers bailed me out that night, two or three businesses lost, health compromised, lost that wife, on and on and on, and steady, in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, listen to the crap disguised as recovery. Now, if you like those kind of meetings, I apologize. I make my amends now. Go ahead. And you're right, Cliff. We got off the page. We got off the page. Somewhere along the line, we got off the page. And all we ended up doing was helping the hard drinkers. And the alcoholics, the people like me, died by the thousands. Success rate in Alcoholics Anonymous went through the toilet. How can you take some statistics in 1940, worst case scenario, 65% getting sober, best case, nearly 100% around Akron, and take them today to the statistics that Cliff Bishop's talking about? Almost in this far from a pissing contest with Clancy last weekend, 2 weekends ago down in Padre Island. He's sharing from the podium, and I'm sharing. He came up and shook my hand and says, "Chris, we appreciate your share. It was a good share, but, you know, your statistics are wrong." You know, he wants to take exception with this. Everybody wants to look the other way and pretend that everything's great in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you happen to be coming to meetings like this, everything's great in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you happen to be going to some other groups in town where they let you off the hook and they won't hold you accountable, things are not so great. You're dropping like flies out there. Where are the old-timers? God, it's so frustrating. Have you ever watched little kids hunt Easter eggs? You know what I'm talking about? And it's like you got a bunch of little kids, and you go out and hide these Easter eggs, you know, and so you make some hard, and you make some, you just throw them out on the lawn. They're just out there, you know, because you want to give the little kids something to find. And they're out there running around looking and says, "Where the hell are they? Where the hell are they?" They're looking up. They're down here. They're right here. You're stepping on them, you know. You know what I'm talking about? That's exactly what this solution's about. Everybody that works the steps is going to have an experience with God, and the obsession to use is going to leave. But we can't get you to work the steps. And the only reason you won't work the steps is if you don't understand what alcoholism really is. A physical allergy coupled with a mental obsession, the insanity that the book was just talking about, this belief that you can stay sober on a non-spiritual basis. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to change my life and everything's going to be good. Everything's going to be great. I'm going to get rid of that stupid woman and I'm going to move to another town and turn over a new leaf, and man, life's going to be great. Yeah? How many times have we done this, guys? How many of you cats out here in this room right now, you alcoholics, how many of you guys drank when you had tons of money? We do it every time I get to visit with you guys. How many when you had no money? I love it. How many when you live in a great big town? Nice, yeah, crappy little town like Ingram, where I live. Yeah. Big house. Burned out trailer. Here's the kicker. With somebody that you really love that was a dang fine person. With some beast with one tooth. You know, this week I'm going to get to do a deal. I'm going to get to do a little group with a bunch of therapists up there in Kerrville. And it's a nice gathering of people up there, and a lot of professionals are going to be there. And I'm going to ask them that. You know, because it seems like when we go to these gatherings with all these professionals, that's all they seem to want to talk about. How can you organize your little life over here so you don't have to drink over here? It just doesn't work that way, folks. Because I'm going to tell you something. I'm an organizing fool. And I've changed my life in a heartbeat. Ask Myers. She, every time I turned around, I said, Myers, can you help me move? Geez, not again. Jesus. Myers, bring some other girl with that. Who is this? I mean, this was a different... Change girls. Change houses. Change cars. Change jobs. Change. What am I running from? What am I trying to... This internal condition. The third piece of our disease is the spiritual malady. The internal... Guys, it's the most terrible, terrible place to be on earth. Day in, day out. Night in, night out. This internal discomfort stays with me, and that's alcoholism. And you know you'll die from it, whether you're drinking or whether you're sober. A lot of you guys in here know exactly what I'm talking about. You put the alcohol and drugs away from Chris Raymer, I get worse, not better. Can y'all get down with that? Some of you nice Al-Anons in here, you've seen us when we're dry, not sober. We're dry, you know? I mean, we'll drive you nuts. We'll wear you out because nothing's good enough. You've got to do something to make me happy. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. The internal condition is what gets you. And then we know how to treat it, but nobody wants to do it. I'll go ahead and just say it right now. Nobody wants to talk about the God thing because you can't charge for it. Well, it's the truth. And I'll tell you another reason. Because it takes courage to talk about God. It takes courage to stand for... Why, I don't know. It takes courage to stand for the power, stand for something. We're all so stupidly concerned about how we look. Oh, you don't want to piss anybody off. Oh, you don't want to offend anybody. Great. Super. Been there, because some of you guys in this room don't have a problem going into a meeting and cleaning house and taking names. Do I think we ought to be in AA meetings picking fights with people? Absolutely not. Do I think we need to stand for the clear message of hope that was given to us 67 years ago? Absolutely. Absolutely, because it's the only game in town. It's the only thing we had to fall back on. We did the stat out of Houston. 2,200 discussion meetings a week in Houston, Texas. 55 big book meetings, 14, 12, and 12 meetings. Now, what the hell is this about? 2,200 meetings a week, and only 55 of them are big book meetings. That means if you want to talk about God and the power and learn how to have a spiritual experience, you got 55 places to go and talk about it. But if you want to talk about that stupid, pathetic life of yours one more time, and this, guys, I'm going to tell you, 2 weeks from now I'll be in Canada. A few weeks later I'll be in New York talking. And it's like, it doesn't make jack where I speak. When I start talking about this, you can see the faces and the little grinding. Well, he had me there for a while. I thought he was pretty good until he started talking about that whining in meetings and stuff. I mean, AA, that's what it's for us to go share our problems. That's where we're off the page. Alcoholics Anonymous was never intended to be a dumping ground for your problems. And you're disguising, you're calling it sharing. I call it dumping. And I got to tell you something. You know the alcoholic that's in the room and he's been drinking and he's hurting and he wants some hope? You know what he calls it? Boring. Gosh, guys, you know, it's like all of us have problems. I had a friend of mine from Houston that owns some Denny's. He sent me some Denny's shirts, you know, and I wear them every once in a while. I'm going to wear the Denny's shirts, you know, because I think that's the place we need to go and talk about this stuff. Let's go find... We've laughed about this 1,000 times. I've talked about it on tapes before. We ought to all get together. That's what we did when I got sober in 1987. Those old-timers got around me, and they said, buddy, we ain't talking about her anymore. We ain't talking about the car insurance. We're not talking about the job. We're not talking about Jack. What we're going to talk about is God and the steps. Oh, you're not connected to God? Oh, you're not working the steps? Guess what? You got nothing to say. Let me tell you what happened. In 1987, I was working for Myers. Thank God he hired me. I couldn't cook anymore. My hands shook so bad. I was a chef for years, and I was, you know, a little jittery with the knives, don't you know? And The depression's killing me, and I'm off the page, and I'm not a happy camper, and I'm eating antidepressants by the handfuls to try to stay, functioning, and it's just not working. And I go home one night and decide to off myself. We're the most selfish people on earth. It's the only solution I could find. It's not that I wanted to die. It's that I just didn't want to feel the way I was feeling anymore. Alcoholism is progressive, and there was a day when alcohol worked. And it's like alcohol is good, guys. We drink for the effect. I'm down with that. But after a period of time, the alcohol stops working and it stops treating that internal condition. And I'm drinking, and the depression didn't leave. It's staying with me now, and I'm not happy, joyous, and free anymore. If the shit was still working, I'd still be using it. I'd be doing it, but it stopped. And now I'm in trouble. And I want to do good at work, and I'm not doing good at work. And I want to be happy, and I'm not happy. And it seemed like the thing to do, just like so many of us. I wanted to die. I'm going to tell you something right now, guys. There's some of you in this room right now that are in that spot. And I'm here to tell you, I want you to listen to what I'm saying. Because I understand what you're going through. And there's a bunch of people in this room understand. And that's why we take this thing so serious. We laugh a lot, but there is a way out. It's called God's grace. Now, my job is to get connected to that power. Now, how can I do that? And that's what the page we were talking about, page 17. It's a common solution. Some of you guys have been through the ringer. It's high time you got connected to some power. I boarded that suicide attempt that night. I'll never forget that night as long as I live. I don't talk about it much. I hit it real superficially. I hit it superficially on tapes. I hit it superficially in groups when I'm talking. It was just a scary damn night. It was just a scary night. It was no different than any other night, except the depression was killing me. And I was done. And I had a twin brother that I loved and a family. And it was just... I aborted the attempt. I made myself sick, and I threw the pills up. I believe I heard God say, don't do it. Go back to AA. Don't know what I heard. I heard, go back to AA. And the next day, I went back. I had a guy that did a 12-step call on me one night after a blackout, and he picked me up over here in Grapevine, and he called me over to Louisville Group, and he said, Chris, you want to go in? And I said, no, I'm not dressed right. And the truth is, I didn't want to go in there because there was too many people laughing and having a good time. But I went back to this meeting. I knew where it was. I'd never been there before, and I went back. I just met a girl from that group tonight, and bless her, I'm glad it's still there. And I went in the back door that night, and there was a room full of people. There was about 40 people in there, and they were all smoking cigarettes and laughing, and they were all carrying big books, just like Cliff was talking about. And they were all talking about God and the steps. You'll follow what I'm saying? We walked in, and they were laughing. And they'd seen me around the fellowship for years, and some of those people knew me, and they just said, Chris, here's what we're going to do tonight. Would anybody like to share some hope with this guy? Would anybody like to share what God has done for you with me? Now, y'all are going to think I'm making this up. Because, every first step meeting I ever went to, the first thing they did was start with a stupid-ass war stories. They didn't do that to me tonight. There's a line in the book, in Bill's story, and it talks about Ebby doing the 12-step call on Bill. And he says, never mind the musty past. Here stood a man. I know, really. It's God. Here sat a man shouting great tidings, and that's exactly what these people did to me. They didn't sit around and tell any stupid war stories. Guys, I don't know why we do that in our AA meetings. There's one place for your stupid war story, and it's in a 12-step call. Once the cat comes in the door, we've got him. You with us? Stick a fork in him. He's done. Why do you want to continue to cook him? It's just like... I know what you're doing. My job is to share my experience, strength, and hope. I need to mention this to you, and I'm going to lose some of you here. Give me a little leeway here. Experience, strength, and hope, that line comes in the prefaces. You with me? And that preface was at the second edition. And I don't know who wrote it, but Bill Wilson didn't write it. You with us? The original preface for the first edition didn't say anything about sharing your experience, strength, and hope. Dig? But everybody wants to grab on it. That's my one job. No, the traditions clearly state what your one job is, to carry the message of hope to the newcomer. Your job is to carry the message of hope to the newcomer. Isn't that right? Our primary purpose. Oh, what a great name for a group, Cliff. I'll get with you after the meeting. We'll work on something. We'll pencil something in. Unbelievable. That's our primary purpose, folks, is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. It didn't say anything about your chicken shit experience, strength, and hope. Why do you think no matter where I'm speaking, no matter what area I'm talking in, when Myers and I do workshops together, we talk about this and we get the same kind of standing ovation, applause, people. If it drives everybody crazy, why are we allowing it to happen? Who in the hell's group is this? Whose fellowship is this? It's our fellowship. Why don't we take it back? Why don't we change the formats of our groups to not allow that? There's a place for your war stories, folks, in a 12-step call. You get the call. He's at Denny's. He's in the back booth. He's drunk. You need to get his attention. You need to get his confidence. Share some stories with him so that the cat understands where you're coming from. You with us? Then bring him to a meeting, and now we've got him. Share the hope. Share the hope. Don't share another stupid war story with him. He's here. What are you trying to do? Scare him into staying? You can't scare an alcoholic. It's bullshit. Here's what I don't understand. And going back to the whining, pissing, and moaning stuff, here's what I don't understand. If our primary purpose says we have our singleness of purpose and our traditions tell us that we have one job here to help the alcoholic get well, you follow us? We don't have any problem at all if there's a drug addict in one of our meetings to shut him down. Now listen, I'm down with singleness of purpose. Drug addict comes in, starts talking about all the dope he shot, we shut him down and tell him to be quiet. We're not here to talk about your dope days. Dig? But you can come in and talk about your stupid freaking divorce until the cows come home. What? How is that different, friends? How is that different? It's an outside issue. It's got nothing to do with whether you're staying sober or not. It has nothing to do with booze. It's got nothing to do with God. So why are we talking about it? Bill Wilson, in a letter in 66, wrote a great little article in the Asbury Seasons. There's an excerpt for this. It says, an AA group as such cannot take on all the personal problems of its members, let alone the non-alcoholics in the world around us. This is where the traditions came from. This is why sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice phase 12 steps, is the sole purpose of the group. Absolutely. Why are we drinking? If you're drinking because of those problems, you're not one of us. I'm not making light of the problems, but you need to talk about that. Why don't you do this? Why don't you see one of us after the meetings? If you're coming apart at the seams, we'll go to Denny's and talk about it. If we don't have the expertise to be able to find you somebody to talk to, we'll find you a great counselor or a therapist, somebody trained to help you talk about it. Because that's our job. The absolute arrogance of us. Arrogance of us to think that we can fix everybody and every problem. Myers and I do workshops all around talking about sponsorship stuff. You know one of the number one reasons that we don't sponsor people, that the newcomer's afraid to go sponsor? Because they're afraid they're going to hurt somebody. Because they're afraid they won't have the right answer. Newcomer's supposed to share hope with the next newcomer. Jesus, can we do that? The newcomer's supposed to share the information out of this book. Can we do that? Other than that, there's nothing else for us to do. We are not therapists. AA is not therapy. This is not a self-help program. If you're using it as that, please go away. Myers just read how it works. The ABCs, what did it say, please? That no human power could fix what's wrong with me. Ain't that right? I got to do is get connected to God. Ain't that something? Ain't that something? Jesus. Why is that so controversial? Why does that make so many of y'all uncomfortable? Because we're going to leave these rooms, I guarantee you, and some of you guys go to Primary Purpose, and some of you guys go to these other groups, and you're going to go right back in, and the first thing you're going to listen to, look at the looks on your face already. He didn't have the right to tell us what we can share in a meeting. Screw you. Yeah. Yeah. And you don't have time to take up our valuable recovery time. You don't have time to take up our valuable recovery time talking about your shit. Most selfish people on earth. Can you believe this, guys? We've been given the absolute gift of sobriety, the absolute number one guaranteed path to God. And we're going to allow you to come in here and talk about your crap. I'm not having a... I'm not having a very good day. No kidding. Next. Because see, guys, we don't have a problem getting these cats to Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't have any problem getting people to Alcoholics Anonymous. They don't have any problem getting cats to Cocaine Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous. You know what we have a problem doing? We have a huge problem getting people to stay once they get to this fellowship. Because they can't stand it. They cannot stand listening to the whining. They cannot stand listening to the stupid war stories. The two things that we are not supposed to do in our meetings. Where's the hope? Where's the hope? Jesus, in 1987, when I walked back in that room, the little girl grabbed hold of me and set me down in a chair and said, "Sit down, buddy. You're not going nowhere." She called me cowboy. I'll never forget. Her name was Denise. She sat down and I busted out tennis shoes and old pair of cutoffs on. I mean, I was busted up. She sat down and cleaned up my spilt coffee and had a little hand on my knee the whole time. Just stay right here. Stay right here. And right after the meeting, a bunch of the old timers got together. I said old timers. There was a girl that was sitting there holding my little hand was a year old, about 9 months of sobriety. The guy that was going to be my sponsor had a little less than a year, had about 11 months sobriety. And there was a couple of guys in there with a couple of years, and they came up around me and they said, "Chris, we're here to talk to you about the big book real quick. You got a minute?" And they started talking to me they asked me point blank, "Do you want to stay sober for the rest of your life?" You've heard me 1,000 times. I made the wrong ultimate mistake with that little group at the time. I said, "Well, you know, one day at a time." Nope. They said, "Buddy, we're not interested. You're either ready to get sober or you're not. Because we don't have time to mess with you." What they did, they qualified me that night. They asked me about alcoholism, and they asked me if I was really needing to be here. They were checking to see if I needed to be in a sister fellowship or not. They were checking to see if I needed to be in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did. The next day, they came and got me. Led me back over to a meeting, and we did a third step prayer. They gave me some information to do a fourth step, and I started my journey. 2 weeks later, I'd had a spiritual experience, and my life had changed forever. Yeah. 2 weeks. Two weeks. During those 2 weeks, real quick, and I'll let you guys go. 2 weeks, I'm sitting there in that meeting, and the first thing they had me do, I'll never forget. I came in on a Friday, y'all with me? And I did a third step prayer on a Saturday. And then Sunday night at 6 o'clock, I'm sitting there, and they said, "Chris, we need somebody to answer the phones." And I said, you need to get somebody else to answer your stupid phones. I said, "I'm sitting in this room detoxing. I don't have time to mess with this. What's this phone business?" There's a payphone against the wall. Some of y'all remember in Louisville group, there was a payphone and a little couch sitting underneath it, and there was a meeting schedule on the wall next to it. It says, "Chris, if the phone rings, answer it and help somebody get a meeting schedule. That's all we're asking you to do. We're not asking you to go out and save any lives or you know, run into any burning buildings or anything. We're just asking you to answer the stupid phone." I'll never forget. And I'm just pissed because I'm embarrassed. I don't know. What, you know, if I'm sitting there trying to sputter and argue, and it's ding, 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 you know, phone rings. I go, "Oh, shit." I said, "What do I do?" He says, "Answer it." I said, "How?" They look at me, this is like deer in the head, like, what do you mean, how? It's like, Louisville group. I picked up the phone. God, fuck. Louisville group. I go, "She's Al-Anon. She wants an Al-Anon meeting." I said, there's the meeting schedule right there. Show her where the Al-Anon meeting is. Tell her what time it is. It's 7:30. It's 7:30. Talk to the lady. And it turns out that I know the lady. Myers is next door neighbor. It's this lady that this cat's married to, and he's been drinking forever. Anyway, I know this lady. She says, "Hey, I know you." I said, "I'm not doing anything tonight. I'll meet you out front. You just look for me." She'd recognize the patch. And she's, "You look for me, and I'll flag you down, and you come in." And I'll blah, blah, blah. You with me? And I did that night. I'm going to tell you, the minute I hung up that phone, though, there was a little bit different in my demeanor, you know? And anybody else from that time on would go near that phone. I mean, for months, they finally had to pry that job away from me. You know what I mean? The phone would ring, ding, ding, ding. Somebody would start going for it. And I'd go, "No, hey, no. You could kill somebody if you answer this phone wrong, buddy. Let me take care of this." Because all of a sudden, what I'm doing, what's different is I'm not talking about your fellowship anymore. I'm talking about my fellowship. And I'm not talking about your group anymore. I'm talking about my group. It becomes quite personal when you start participating. Some of you guys, you've been around the fellowship for years, and all you still are is participants. You're out there on the side of the, just watching. Come on. Get close. If there's something going weird in your group, change it. It's your responsibility. Don't wait for the old-timer to do it. They're busy doing some other things. You dig? I'll tell you what else may be happening. Maybe they're just plumb wore out, fighting the battle themselves. Maybe it's time for some of us little new coots to get in the trenches with the rest of these cats and start taking some responsibility. Yeah. Yeah. Let me read you a little story. There's a little book called How It Works about Clarence Snyder. And we're not pitching Clarence here, but, you know, he was a big 12-stepper. He's a big idea. Basically, this little thing, some of y'all have heard me talk about this before, but this little skinny guy is a guy named Archie. This Arch is a real story. I mean, this is a real cat. And he'd been holding up in Dr. Bob's house. He'd been there for about 6 months. They'd just been sitting on this guy, you know, because he's got little phobias, and he's scared of his own shadow, and he's just scared to death, and he comes out and eats, and then he goes back to his little room. This is what the book says, right? And Dr. Bob and him are sick and tired of having this cat hang around, you know. This is like, man, go hang someplace else, you know. And so they send him back with Clarence back to Akron, to Cleveland. And Clarence was going to use him. Let's see if I can find this little deal. Archie looked at me like he was hit with a club. And Clarence said, nobody had ever asked Archie to do anything. That's just like some of you guys in here. Are you with us? They end up getting back to town. Arch reluctantly got in the back seat with Edna and sailed in for the long ride. Clarence breathed a sigh of relief and sank back into the driver's seat. He relaxed and drove back to Cleveland. Edna was off his back. Okay, listen. The next day, Arch seemed somewhat different. All he did was get off his ass and drive back to Cleveland with a bunch of big book thumpers. Dig? The very next day, Arch seemed somewhat different. Maybe it was the fear that Clarence would force him to suffer a long ride with Edna, or maybe it was something even more profound. Arch got so busy with AA in Cleveland that he appeared to change right before Clarence's eyes. Arch went to hospitals and dry-out places, helping drunks all over the place. He got so busy and so far in over his head that he forgot all about his fears and phobias. Surprisingly, he became a big asset to Clarence and became one of the boys. He eventually went back to Akron a new man. Within a few months, he returned to Grosse Pointe and started the first AA meeting in Detroit. Dig? But he sat on his butt for 6 months and didn't do anything. And that's what happens to us in the fellowship. We're so afraid of offending the alcoholic by telling them to get up and come help us, right? Trying to be politically correct, trying to be easy does it, take it easy, taking everything out of context, you see, that we won't ask the alcoholic to do the one thing that's going to save his life. This is a program of action, folks. Action is not a program of think. It's a program of action. We act our way into wellness. Jesus, how can we get you guys to do it? How can we get the people to do it? 2 weeks after I walked into that fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous in Louisville, Texas, I got out of my truck one night up in North Texas, and I pulled the tailgate down on my truck and sat there in that old parking lot off there off 121 and cried like a baby. And I looked around me, and there was liquor stores all around me and 7-Eleven stop and go, and my outside issue dealer lives in the apartment complex where I live. And it's Friday night, and I got a pocket full of money, and I'm sitting on the tailgate crying, not because I'm miserable, because I don't want to use. Because the desire to drink has been lifted from me. And that's called recovery, and that's called God's grace. You dig? And that's where everybody in this room can be. And that's where every alcoholic out there on the street right now, everybody in those big old penthouses or in those little old burned-out trailers in the south of town, wherever the hell they are, that's where they can be if they do the work. Everybody's different, Chris. Everybody's going to have a different experience. That's a crock. That's a crock. Let me say one more thing. I'm going to let you out. Please. There was a therapist in town that I locked horns with a couple of weeks ago, and I heard we'd been sending patients back to primary purpose, and primary purpose, we were getting word back from the patients that basically this counselor was telling them not to go to primary purpose. We'd send them to primary purpose. They'd come here. They'd go see their therapist, and the therapist would say, don't go to that group. Go to a different group. They're too rigid over there. So I called the old boy, and because you see, it's called mixed messages to the alcoholic. If we're telling the alcoholic that their life depends on working with others, and we send them to a group where they tell them to go work with others, and now the therapist is telling them to go to groups where they ask you not to go work with others, you haven't got anything to share for the first year. You can't chair, you can't sponsor until you're sober 2 years. Y'all hear that crap? That's exactly what it is. What happened to Arch? What happened to Bill Wilson? What happened to Dr. Bob? What happened to the first 100? They didn't wait 2 years to start working with others. Jesus, guys, we're dealing with the worst, the absolute most fatal illness in the world, guys. Alcoholism, drug addiction kills more people than cancer and AIDS combined. That's a real statistic. And how are you going to get well? The number one way you get well is get out of yourself. I will go work with somebody else. But we're going to have the absolute asinine arrogance to tell a newcomer that they don't have anything to share with a wet one. You don't have the right to sit on your butt. One, we don't have time. Guys, it's desperate out there, folks. It's desperate, and we need your help. Jesus, unbelievable. I asked this therapist, I asked him, what's the point? He said, well, you know, there's different paths to God. There's different ways to do this. Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. You know, except the cats that come to our hospital are glass gaspers. They're chronic relapsers. They need something with some pretty serious medicine in it. You know, I mean, we're dying from middle-of-the-road solution. Then I asked him the kicker. I said, buddy, you know, you're being pretty critical of this little group. You know, you're coming down. I hear a little edge in your voice. You're coming down pretty hard on this group. Let me ask you point blank. I said, did you ever go over there and sit in a big book study and listen to them talk about God and the steps and see how they work their meetings? Well, no, I've never been over there. But, you know, I said, oh, great. Just like a lot of people in this fellowship, you're talking about something that you've got absolutely no experience with. But ain't it the truth? Come on, guys. How do you know it won't work? You go to one of these wind-up joints, and you sit across the table from somebody that's hopeless. That's got 10,000 legal problems backing up over their head, and a wife that's packing, and sick kids at home, and no money. Extended liver out to here, compromised health problems, and they're sitting in this room, and they're sitting there thinking, so like, what the hell am I going to do? This ain't going to work. I've been to treatment before. This ain't going to work. And you sit in a room with somebody like that, and you walk up to them and share a little hope with them, and watch the light change in their eyes. Watch them turn the corner. Watch them start for a second, just come on, just rigidly not believing what you're saying, and then turn the corner and start realizing that, God damn it, worked for you. Maybe it'll work for me. And you watch a little hope come across their face. And you just see if you want to go drink. There's nothing like it in the world. One alcoholic working with another alcoholic. And I've seen this 1,000 times. I let somebody else do it. No, you don't understand. Do you think it was coincidence that Myers came to this group? Do you think it was coincidence that I ended up in Hunt, Texas? Do you think it's coincidence that Cliff was here or that any of you guys in this room who showed up tonight? Do you think it's a coincidence? You sit in the meeting and you watch that door and you wait for the newcomer to come in and you make sure that that newcomer is yours. Don't talk about something you don't know anything about. You're not doing 12-step work. You're not sponsoring anybody. Don't sit in these meetings and shrug your shoulders and say this doesn't work. You go do what the fellowship asks you to do. Please. We sure need you. 6 states now have passed litigation. They're in the Court of Appeals now, and it's law in one state already that we can't talk about God in our state-funded facilities. Treatment centers that are state-funded, federal-funded monies, if you follow us, are not going to be able to talk about God. With me? Which means what? Guys, you can look this up on any website. The information is out there for anybody that wants to read it. The most recent one is the one we were talking about last year, the State Court of Appeals in New York, already coming down the pike with this business. Federal government's in trouble because they're sending probationers to our rooms, and it's a religious order, quote-unquote, to them, and because we talk about God, they're not going to fund these facilities. So here's what's happening. They're going to start shutting these facilities down, because, guys, if we can't talk about God, if we can't talk about Alcoholics Anonymous, what the hell are we going to give these patients? If it's a private-funded facility, you're not a problem. But the state-funded facilities where they get the real damn drunks, a lot of the times, they're not going to be able to talk about this business. Now, where are these guys going to come to? Absolutely. We're going to have to do our jobs. We're going to have to get back in the trenches where we were supposed to be all along. We're going to have to stop looking at the treatment centers to fix what's wrong. We're going to have to start talking about God and the steps. But it scares the daylights out of a bunch of you. A bunch of you don't even kind of want to go there. Because you're going to actually have to get up off your ass and stop talking about your pathetic little life and actually do the work. And that's a scary thing, isn't it? But I'm going to tell you guys, I'm going to tell you to shut up and get out. That's the absolute greatest gift. That's the greatest gift that I can give anybody in this room is the privilege and the chance to participate in somebody else's recovery. You think you haven't got anything to share? Let me tell you something, buddy. When that newcomer comes in, you grab him around the little neck, show him where the bathroom is, get him a cup of coffee, and talk to him about God and the steps. Tell him about how your life has changed. It takes my breath away to watch and see what happens. This is what Bill Wilson said. Back into As Bill Sees It, this little booklet. It says, AA in 2 words. I think Cliff sent this to me years ago. All AA progress can be reckoned in terms of just 2 words, humility and responsibility. Our whole spiritual development can be accurately measured by our degree of adherence to these magnificent standards. It is by them that we will be enabled to find and to do God's will. Humility. Humbly understand what your job is in AA. Your job in AA is not to bring the problems. Your job is to bring the solution. You with us? And responsibility. If you've got a meeting that's going south, turn it around. You got somebody in the meeting that's pontificating and talking too long like I am now? Shut them up. If you've got meetings where people are using them as dumping grounds, change the formats, please. Return them to literature-based meetings so that we can start hearing some solutions in our fellowships. We need every single one of you, every one of you in our fellowships. You with us? I'm so honored to be here. I love you very much. See you. Thanks.
That was awesome. That was awesome. And on behalf of everybody here, I want to thank Chris for being up here and sharing his message, sharing the message. And at his request, I'm going to wait till we pass the basket, so I'll go ahead and do my deal. Afterwards, we're having an inner child workshop, so if you're wounded and your feelings are hurt, stick by. Dr. Phil's coming by. It'll be great. It'll be great. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But you obviously cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Get freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Big book, the textbook, page 164. If you'd like to become a member of our group, please take one of the white envelopes from the basket when it comes around. If you're already a member and you have had a change in your phone number, address, or sobriety date, take the white card and update your information. Return the card to me. Our seventh tradition states that each group ought to be self-supporting through their own contributions. If this is your first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, or if you're visiting, we ask that you be our guest. We are glad that you came and hope you will come back and become a part of our lives. And while we're passing the basket, we usually have like a little song and dance, but I want to read something from a couple fellow members of this group, a little correspondence that took place a couple months ago. It says, if 1 out of 10 people are alcoholics, how many people do we come into contact with throughout our days? 10, 20 or more? I'm pretty sure that our big book says that we are to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Who are those people about us? We are instructed to ask doctors, ministers, etc., about where we can locate those who are still suffering. So why can't we ask other people with other professions? Everyone in this world knows somebody that has a problem with either alcohol or drugs. Why aren't we trying to be of more service in our daily lives? Would it be wrong to strike up a simple conversation with the lady behind you in the grocery line? How do you know that she hasn't been crying and pouring her heart out to God to bring someone into her life that can help her son or daughter? How do you know unless you ask or unless you take the action? We don't if we don't. I personally feel that we're only being of service between certain hours of our day. What about the other time that we have been blessed with? Why not take full advantage of each and every opportunity that we are given? Can we step up and step out just a little bit more? Who knows what kind of miracles will take place in our lives when we just reach out. Not just to the treatment facilities and jails, but to the quiet lady standing behind you. And the reply is this. There is a world of misunderstanding and ignorance out there. And our mission is to have our head in the clouds and our feet firmly planted on this earth, as that's where our fellow travelers are. If Dr. Bob and Clarence and Bill et al. were alive, what actions would they take? Would they sit back and wait for the alcoholics to come to them? Not a chance. Would they show up at a meeting or two in hopes of finding a prospect if they're not too bad off? The middle of the road is alive and flourishing, and it breaks my heart. Some toes will be stepped on to bring the solution to those who seek it, but bring it we will. What better way to thank God for giving me another chance? Excuse me. What better way to thank God for giving me another chance than by getting off my rear and carrying the solution to someone who is dying just like I was? Dr. Bob worked with over 5,000 people before he died. Do you think that the concept of work with another alcoholic being vital to permanent recovery was a big player? You bet it was. Think of the healing in our own lives and the joy and hope that is brought to our families, friends, etc., as a result of relying on God and practicing these principles. What if the following excerpt from Bill's story held true today? All of us spend much of our spare time. I'm going to repeat that. All of us spend much of our spare time doing this sort of thing. A few of us are fortunate enough to be so situated that we can give nearly all of their time to the work. If we keep on the way we are going, there is little doubt that much good will result, but the surface of the problem would hardly be scratched. Those of us who live in large cities are overcome by the reflection that close by, hundreds are dropping into oblivion every day. Many could recover if they had the opportunity we have enjoyed. How then shall we present that which has been so freely given us? The textbook, page 19. It ends like this. A paraphrase from the textbook, page 129. I plan on going to the mine today, armed with my pick and God in my heart. My pick will strike gold today, and I'm going to give the entire thing away. That's all I got on that. It is the practice of the primary purpose group to offer a desire chip to anyone who has a desire to stop drinking. This chip indicates a desire to never drink again, one day at a time. Would anyone like to begin their journey tonight? This is a good place to get a desire chip, I'm telling you. All right, our announcements are, our regularly scheduled meetings are at 7:30 on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, 7:30 p.m. Open Big Book Study on Tuesday, Big Books and the Steps and Tradition Study on Thursdays. The first Saturday of every month, we celebrate birthdays and haven't eaten meat. The remainder of the month, we dedicate to a step speaker, and in the month of February, it will be Scott Weisenbaker. All right. This is a great place to meet people who are doing the deal, working on the firing line, and a great place to hear what this program has to offer. Al-Anon meets Monday and Friday at 12 noon and Thursdays at 7:30 p.m. We've got a lot of people on our prayer list. I don't have the prayer list in front of me. That's my bad. I'd like to thank Ellen and Chris for being here tonight. And let's give them another hand right here. And I would like to thank again everybody who got here at 2:30 or 3 o'clock this afternoon and helped set up, you know. And it's just an awesome effort. And every time we do this, we're always stressed about who's going to do it, how we're going to do it. It always works. God is good to us, you know. It's so great. And if you're a guest tonight, you know, stick around for the mix and mingle. We'll introduce you to some people, and we invite you back in the future. And I want to thank everybody for being here. Thanks for putting up with my stammering. Oh, my God. It's been a long time since I had to wear a suit in a while, you know. But we're all going to join hands and close in the Lord's Prayer. Thanks for being here.